Welcome to the cast of the new film, Switch That Love. We get to talk with the director and one of the stars of the film. Listen in. Hi, guys. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's super cool to be here. Thank you for having us on.
I'm really excited.
Thank you for having us on. I appreciate the time.
Oh, I'm really excited, too. I saw the preview of the movie. I'm looking forward to it. What I'd like to start with, though, is, you know, your background, how you got into entertainment, what kind of stuff that you watched as kids, that kind of stuff. Jamal, would you like to start?
Sure, that's cool. All right, once again, Sherry, thanks for having us on the show. It's super awesome to be here. So let's get into it. My name is Jamal McWhorter. I am the director of the film Switch That Love, and my background basically has all been creative and artistic. I started doing music as a young kid. I was just like, I watched a lot of TV, I watched a lot of music artists, so I wanted to kind of do that. And I started doing music, and then as time went on, I went to Georgia State and started learning about film, and that really made me get into the film side, and I started a production company, a film production company with my two business partners. Shout out to Marcus and Shaquita. They're actually producers and executive producer on the film Switch That Love. We started our film production company back in 2013, I believe, and it was called Loud Films, LOUD, which was Living Out Your Dreams.
Oh, that's
kind of what we had. Yeah, you know, we were trying to get a little clever with it. And Switch That Love is actually our fourth production. So we've been hard at work for the last going on 10 years. And it's just been really fun. It's been an amazing journey.
That's cool. When you were a kid, you said you started with music. Did you like movies and TV shows? Or was it just were you one of those guys that always had a headset on and didn't really watch TV or watch movies?
I think I liked them both equally. Like, I definitely used to watch movies and TV. I actually was in drama club in elementary school, so I was very in tune with the acting side early, but I think I felt at the time that the music was just more immediate. Like, it was just more of an immediate, I guess, release of creativity, if that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
That made sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And Danny, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you. Hey, everybody. My name is Danny Arroyo. I play Jackson, lead actor in Switch That Love. I'm also a co-producer on the project. I've been acting for a number of years since I was young. Has eventually evolved from just acting to writing, because I write screenplays as well. People hire me to ghostwrite or write scripts. I write my own scripts. I also direct and I produce projects, so eventually evolved into a filmmaker who still acts in other people's projects, especially my own. I had the good fortune of meeting Shaquita, who plays my love interest in Switch That Love, on a film that I was playing the lead role in Birmingham, Alabama, called Nobody's Angels. I met her there, and I was also a co-producer on that one. And when I saw that Switch That Love, there was a breakdown for it. And I knew Shaquita. I reached out to her. And I was like, hey, do you remember me from Nobody's Angels? I'd love a chance to read for this project. And she invited me to audition. I submitted, and I wound up getting the role. And it was a really fun, you know, maybe a month-long shoot. I had a great time. We filmed down in Atlanta. I got to meet Jamal. I met a ton of the cast there, which was just a blast, just a great mix of people, fun, all different personalities, lots of laughter, a lot of good times, and the end result is the film that you see, which we're very proud of.
That's cool. And did you like movies when you were a kid? I mean, how did, or were you a theater guy? How did you start with your inspiration to be an actor and a writer?
Yeah, it definitely began with TV and film. I mean, I guess you just kind of, you know, leaned heavily into what you're interested in as a child. And as a child, I was into sports, and I was into movies, and I was into TV. So that's why, probably to this day, I watch movies, and I'm an actor, and then I work out like crazy. You know, things that you've developed as a young child, that builds your foundation, and it becomes this. And I used to write a lot when I was younger, too, whether it was journaling or my own stories. And that eventually, you know, evolved into, you know, writing scripts and even a book that I'm trying to write myself one day, autobiography. So I think it all depends on, as a child, what you're doing and what you're into, and then you see it eventually evolve, especially if you're being nurtured. And I have parents who were very nurturing, and they were like, yeah, follow your dreams, follow your passions, which is a big motto of mine when I meet other people who have dreams and passions that express, how do you get into it, or how do I do it, or, you know, do we have a chance? Yes, everybody has a chance to fulfill their dreams and passions, and I'm an advocate of that.
I think that's really important to have parents that are, like, open to you exploring whatever vista you want to explore. Jamel, was your parents like that, too? Just really open to you being a musician or an actor or whatever you were going to be?
You know, they supported it, but, you know, I could tell, at least my mom. My dad, he was a little bit more kind of like, hey, just do your thing, man. As long as you put your all into it, it's cool. My mom, she definitely kind of had an idea for my life way back then. And so, you know, she was always big on school. She wanted me to go to college. Like, it was just not a negotiable in my house at all. So she knew that I was into music and acting, but, you know, I won't say she didn't support it, but it was kind of like, oh, that's something he's having fun with while he, you know, goes and get his real education. That was kind of her mindset. So, which, you know, I'm not mad at these days, but at the time I was like, come on, Mom, I want to be an actor, or, you know, whatever. But, hey.
I think that's normal, though. You know, I mean, your parent wants the best for you, but but as long as she supports you in doing your thing, even if she thinks it's just fun, that's all you need.
Right. Absolutely.
I think most parents that were not raised in the entertainment industry, I think they all think like that. Mm-hmm. Because as much as my parents were supportive, they definitely were like, well, how long are you going to stick doing this? And what's your 3-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? What are you going to do after this is done?
Right.
And it's like, who says I'm going to be done? I don't know how much longer I'm going to keep doing this. And you just kind of keep at it.
Right.
But if you have parents that are in it, I think then, you know, their connections become your connections. And that's a whole different thing there. Or maybe they see something differently. So, yeah, you know, support is one thing, but also they have that realistic bar of like, well, you'll go back and get and do a 9-to-5 job at some point soon. You know, so I did have that happen as well. But in the meanwhile, they were supportive as long as I was into it. So, yeah, so Jamal, I'm with you in the same thing. We get it. We understand.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, my parents were very much into you're going to college. But at the same time, my dad drove me to my auditions when I was an actress in the 80s. And my dad drove me to all my auditions. So as much as he wanted me to get my degree, he also was there to support me for doing my dream. So sort of like this.
So you understand, just like the Jamal and myself. You're in the same boat with us then. So welcome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We get it.
I got into the boat with you.
And I will say that, you know, once things started progressing, she definitely became more and more supportive as I continued to show her, like, hey, this isn't some fly-by-night thing. Like, we're in this. When we were actually shooting Switch in Love, Danny was able to meet my mom. We went by my house for a second to pick up something, and he was able to meet my mom, and she just took this super instant liking to him.
Aww.
And she just got, like, she was already excited because she knew what we was doing, and then, like, she saw his IMDb, and it was like, oh, okay, this is the real deal. And, like, she was excited. So, you know, I think especially
she was great. She's so cool.
Yeah, she just wanted to make sure, like, hey, you're not just, like, you know, sitting around doing nothing with your life. So I understand it.
Yeah, me too. I think that's a good parent, you know. It just,
yeah,
that's a parent who loves their child. There's nothing at all wrong with that.
Absolutely.
So you both were you both on the acting once you got into wanting to do film? Were you both on the acting train? Or were you on the writing train, or were you doing everything that you until you could got noticed?
Danny, you want to take that one first?
I'll start that off. You know, I think what happens is most people, when they start off younger, they're thinking about just becoming actors. I this is not 100%, but I'm just saying, at least for me, maybe the people I had in my circle, they just wanted to act. And I get that. There's nothing wrong with that. People hit the lottery and, you know, maybe a week in, six months in, a year in, they may get something really big. And it's like, yeah, see, we made it. You know, and making it means they book something really huge that's going to be a sustained work environment forever. You know, like people who book Friends or people who get on a film and it does really well. And all of a sudden they're working on films continuously. But a lot of us have to keep at it and try to get a gig here and a gig there. And sometimes, you know, you get 3 gigs in a row, great, and then maybe 8 months go by and you get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it happens. And it has nothing to do with your talents.
Nope.
Now, if you're not working and if you're not hustling, then it has everything to do with your talents. But you know deep down if you put in the work and you put in the best job that you could and it was good, the audition, and you didn't get the gig because it had nothing to do with you. You weren't tall enough. You weren't short enough. You weren't, you know, they needed a name or something. So as I was evolving, that's when I started to think to myself, why do I always have to keep relying on outside integers about me not getting gigs? You know what I'm saying? I know I did good, but yeah, there's, you know, 80 other people who read for the same part. And, you know, you never know why you get a part. So that's why I started trying to decide to become a filmmaker, which means write more, produce more. So I'm still auditioning. I'm still submitting my lottery ticket every time I audition, hoping to get that big win. But in the meanwhile, I'm creating my own lottery. And that's why I write. That's why I produce. That's why I try to create my own projects that I'll then put myself in, put my friends in, and now I'm in control.
Nice.
In the meanwhile. And that's, I think, what eventually I hope most people understand is the natural progression of things. Don't just be the person waiting by the phone hoping someone calls. Do that in the meanwhile while you're creating. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Those people will be calling you for work.
That's right.
And that's what I think is the natural evolution of things. Jamal, what do you think?
I'm in full agreement. That was definitely my story as well. I started, I think, like you said, Danny, most kids, you know, because that's what they see. You know, when you watch TV, you see the actors. You really don't see the behind the scenes as much unless you're particularly into that. So that's what you identify with. I want to be the guy on the screen. And it was definitely the same for me. I started off as an extra. The first movie I was an extra in was a movie called ATL starring T.I. And at the time, T.I., he was a rapper, but he was, like, just getting into acting. He was my favorite rapper in the world. And so it was just such a crazy cool experience to be able to meet him and be able to act basically right next to him as an extra, but still. And I enjoyed that, but like Danny mentioned, it was kind of like you keep submitting for these roles and they may or may not call you back, and it's like you kind of want to take your destiny into your own hands. And so same as that thing, said, hey, we can be the ones to make the films. And I always say two of my biggest idols in the film world, Ice Cube and Seth Rogen, and that's because they both started producing their own films and they started putting themselves in the leading roles. Same for Tyler Perry. You know, basically, I'm going to produce my own films starring me and kind of have the best of both worlds. And, you know, that's something that I plan to do myself. So,
Yeah. Which, not plan, you are doing it.
Well, there you go, there you go. Appreciate that, Danny. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of confidence and talent to do it, but it also, it's luck. You know, you don't know, even when you're doing your own creating, it's luck. There's a lot, there it's a balance. It's you working your butt off and somebody giving you a break.
No, I mean, that is correct when it comes to auditioning and acting. But you do have a little more control when you're creating. Now then you're at the mercy of the people who are then contributing to your budget, you know, the executive producers, the people, the investors. So now you're, that's a whole other medium, that's a whole other animal there, you know? So, but you being creative, that's you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can pick up your phone and shoot a very awesome short film that you can submit to, you know, one of thousands of festivals out there that are looking for people to showcase their abilities there. And it doesn't need to be any more than 3 minutes. It could be between 3 and 20 minutes. And you have your phone, which is a very capable camera.
Yep.
There's plenty of people around you who are equally as creative, who are, you know, lighting, who know how to do sound, who know how to have the cameras, who have whatever. So you have the community around you, and you could be making a lot of projects then, and hopefully somebody out there will see it and go, this 10-minute short you made was fantastic. I wonder how you would do with a bigger budget. Let's make it. What other stories do you have? Let's film it.
So, and that's a good point, Danny. Be prepared. Have your stories already. You know, have the stuff there. So when that opportunity comes, you're ready.
You should always try to be ready. I mean, it's such a cliched statement, but, you know, luck is preparation meeting opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times have you heard that? But it is the truth.
Yes.
You know, so I know Jamal has his stories he's ready to film. I know he has ideas. And when someone approaches him, I know he'll be like, well, here's what I got.
Yep.
Are you ready to you know, make some money with me and build a dream together? Let's do it. And same with me. I got a ton of ideas that I've written out and am ready to do. And in the meanwhile, still auditioning. You just can't give up. As long as you have a passion for it and you love what you're doing, it isn't work. We just would love to see our work come to fruition quicker sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And we have to learn to be patient and enjoy the process and have a life outside of this industry. That's the lesson I had to learn over my many years, because I was so into this that I was forsaking going on vacations or doing this or just normal things. And I had to learn to go, you know what, when I punch out, it's time to punch out and let me live my life.
Yeah.
Not worry about this. And that's a good lesson that I'm grateful that I finally did learn. I'm sure Jamal can maybe speak on that as well.
Absolutely. You can burn out very quick in this industry if you don't pace yourself. And, you know, like you said, you just got to unplug from the matrix sometimes. It's necessary. And just a quick aside, because I know Danny mentioned how much he likes to work out. It's crazy because Danny found time when we were shooting Switch to Love. I think we shot over the course of maybe 19 days, maybe a little bit longer. And, I mean, this guy found time to work out every day. And it was super inspiring because I was like, oh, I want to, but I just didn't have it in me. But he just had the discipline, and it was a habit. And he woke up, whether he did it before we shot or after we shot for the day, he was going to find time to work out. So, you know, kudos to that, Danny. That was super inspiring, man.
Super. I appreciate your kind words. You know, I try not to be one that ever preaches, but I hope that I can always lead by example, whether it's acts of kindness or habits that I do. And if someone asks about it, I'm happy to talk to them about it. But, you know, me working out, that's the thing my dad instilled in me. I used to see him jog and train, and he would bring me as a little guy with him and, you know, do sports. And it just, again, it became a foundational thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, something that, you know, I will find time to do. And, you know, in a 24-hour day, you'd be surprised how much of it you spend just sitting around doing nothing. And
yeah.
Nowadays, with social media, you know, you could spend 10, 20 hours a week just scrolling, liking posts.
Yep.
You know, I took a little personal thing about me. I took a little break off of Instagram, for example, like 4 months ago, 4 or 5, was it 5 months already? Time flies. I decided to take a break because I wanted to focus on my writing and just getting, you know, doubling down on what I needed to do. Because when I added up all the hours of me just scrolling on Instagram, I was like, I'm spending 2 hours a day just liking posts. And that's 10 hours I could be doing writing. Or those days I don't feel like working out, saying I have no time to do. I go, yes, you do. You spend 2 hours scrolling, add that time and go work out or go, you know, meditate, which I do every day. So you always will find time if you are motivated and you really want something, you can do it.
Yeah, well, my personal relationship with social media is very much a love-hate thing. So, you know, because I know, like, fundamentally, you know, it helps to be on. It helps to show up when you're trying to build a brand. So I do have my weeks where I just be on it, posting regularly and responding to comments and doing a great job. But then I, like, have the opposite effect a few weeks later where I don't even want to log in. I don't even want to see the app on my phone. It's just, like, no social media this week. And that's just kind of how I've been doing for the last couple of years.
I think that's strong. I think what you're doing there is right. I mean, I'm not recommending people take a complete, you know,
right,
diet of it and go, don't be a part of it. You know, a week on, a week off, I mean, that's strong. It, you know that for that week that you're off, you have all that extra time. What are you going to do that's constructive? And that's just like a thing for Jamal, but anybody out there that's going, I don't have time to do whatever. You'd be surprised how much time you actually do have in a day. You know, whether it's just 30 minutes of writing or, oh, I don't have time to work out. You don't have 30 minutes in a 24-hour day? 30 minutes.
Right.
Three times a week. Of course you do. You know, or to read that script. Well, I don't have time to read the whole script. Well, when they read 30 pages of it. And then the next day, read 30 pages of it. You can get so much done, but people find ways to procrastinate. And it's, if you have a passion for something, you will find a way. That's the bottom line.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Just also think that if you are somebody who's focused on doing certain things, like I write, I do these interviews, I have a radio play show, I do all kinds of different things. You have to focus your time. And I also love to read. So I have one friend who goes, how do you read? How do you have time to read? I go, you make it.
Straight like that.
Yep. Now, the beginnings of your movie, how did that start?
I'll leave Jamal to answer that because he was involved way before I got involved.
Yes. So, how did we get started with Switch That Love? So, the last movie that we had shot before Switch That Love, it was a horror movie called Truth or Double Dare. It was like your classic slasher type film. And, you know, after coming off of that, we decided that we wanted to do something with a little bit more levity, you know, a little bit more lighthearted, you know, funny. We wanted to do something funny. And I honestly, at this point, because that would have had to have been maybe 2018, maybe even late 2017. I can't remember the exact discussion that got us on that path. But I just know we started talking about a funny movie where these two couples switch and we laid out the skeleton. And Marcus, that's my partner, he's also the director, well, I'm sorry, he's the executive producer of Switch That Love and the writer. And he just started working out the story and, you know, we had a script and it was hilarious and we said, this is it. Because we've written a couple of scripts that we didn't go immediately into production with for different reasons. Maybe it was just, you know, this is kind of money intensive. We don't have a budget, or maybe we just didn't want to make the same movie back to back, like, you know, two horror movies back to back. But Switch That Love just checked off all the boxes, and we moved forward with it.
That's great.
It was awesome.
and when you guys started doing the production, the pre-production and then production, was it like a smooth path, or were you bouncing from thing to thing? How does that work for you?
This was by far the smoothest because, you know, we learn from each of our previous times. Like, each time it got better and better. So for this go around, we had a pretty tight system. You know, after the script was made, we locked in the locations. Eventually we got the casting and it was just super smooth. And then once we casted and got the cast locked in, something that we didn't do as much as we should in the previous films before Switch to Love. We don't feel like we did enough rehearsals and table reads and like just letting the cast get the kind of chemistry that they need so it's believable on screen. So for this film, we made sure all of that was in place, and it all just worked out beautifully.
That's always an interesting thing. In modern film and television, the rehearsal period is very much shortened. I'm glad to hear that you guys played in some time for rehearsal, because I think it's when you bond, it's when everything starts working. It's when you know what to put in and what to throw out. Did you have any surprises during the rehearsal period?
Not really surprises. Everything went about as smooth as we could have hoped for and planned for. It was funny because I think the first table read we had, or maybe it was the second one, but I know Danny hadn't made it to Atlanta yet because we were like maybe 2 days away from production. So he was still in L.A., and he was basically on his laptop. Like, we were all together. Everybody who was here in Atlanta were together in the same space. And Danny was here on his laptop because he wasn't in Atlanta. And it was just like, oh, I like that. That was really good dedication. And so he had his laptop, he read his lines, we went through the table read, and everything just went smooth. Everyone was awesome.
That was a fun memory when that table read. I do remember that one of the cast members, Jackie O, she plays Ariel. Mm-hmm. We were talking when I was over there filming, and she said, you know, I can't do her accent or how she speaks, but she's such an awesome person and a character, and she's such a great energy. She's like, you know, I knew that we were doing something really good when I saw you at the table read, and you were friendly in the beginning, but then when you got into your character and you started reading, I was like, oh crap, I got to bring my A game here because he ain't joking.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, that's awesome. I appreciated that. I mean, I just, you know, when it comes to work, I work. But trust me, I want to be the first one to laugh with you in between takes, have a good time, hang out afterwards. But when it comes to work, I'm like, know your lines, you know, develop the character, and let's get some rehearsals in. Let's figure this out. You know, how do we make each other look better? What do you need from me? So that's what this cast was about, man. And it was such an eclectic group of people. And then we're all about trying to help each other out, how we can make each other better. It was great.
Yep.
You know, and Jamal helped with that too. Being the director, also was very open to giving suggestions, mm-hmm. and also open to listening to suggestions as well. One thing I appreciated about Jamal was there was a couple scenes as the script is evolving, and it wasn't maybe following 100% what the script was and what we needed, because maybe we're losing locations, or you know, we realized we needed something more here as the script was going along, and he trusted me to, you know, there were a couple scenes that I kind of like wrote really fast and kind of cleaned up. Remember the scene in the backdrop with the three girls talking about, you know, they're all in their bikinis? Like, that was a scene that I expanded on that, you know. Well, Marcus wrote was fantastic.
Right.
But we knew we needed to expand on it, and you trusted me, and it filmed, and it came out great. And even the scene at the very end, because we lost the location. We were supposed to film a scene in a garage, and we then had to change it up, like, to make it fit in the art studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took me, like, you know, because I write really fast, but it took me, like, 15 minutes, 20 minutes to kind of rewrite, and kind of fit it into the mold of now we're in the art studio. And while it was there, that further evolved. And then, so I really appreciated that. And I guess after working with you for 3 weeks, you kind of realize, you know, I'm somebody that you could trust and do something like this with. So thank you for that. That was great.
Absolutely, man. Danny was amazing because, you know, like you said, I trusted him. He had some great ideas. And, you know, as the director, your attention is getting pulled in every direction at once. And there were a lot of days by the end of by rap time. You know, I was just exhausted by the end of the night. And Danny might just be tweaking a scene, you know, maybe doing some little short rewrites. And by the time I woke up that next morning, he had it ready. And he went to go work out. I'm like, this guy has all the energy. I love it. But, it was, you were invaluable, man. I definitely appreciate you as well.
You made it very easy, and that's also that's a big factor. I've worked with some directors, and you know, you can't say bupkis to them, you can't say anything, you know, and it's like, okay, I get it. This is that kind of production. I'll be the guy who knows my lines and be happy to be here, you know. And some are just very creative. So you're very much an actor's director. You're very into the creative and collaboration of it. So made it very fun. Made it a lot of fun.
Was there improvisation when you guys were working?
Yeah. It did happen enough. I mean, I think we mostly followed the script out of, you know, the respect of that's the script and that's what Marcus wrote and that's what we're planning on filming. But a lot of times, depending on, let's say by, you know, take three or take four, you know, you may have already what's there. You found that we were coming up with different things, or we thought this was funny, we would continue it again. So there was improv. How did you feel about it? What did you experience with that? Because I felt that I stayed to the script, but I improv enough after I got what you needed.
I would agree, definitely. With the comedy, I was definitely cool and even encouraging. Like, you know, like Danny said, after like the second or third take, because, you know, I see things one way, but I always like to let the actors do their thing, because you never know. Like, that's what they do. They're professional actors. This is their life. This is their passion. So it's sometimes fun to just kind of let them do their thing, like just kind of play around with it. And we did that a couple of times, and you know, it worked out good for the most part. It was like the scene that I put on my Directed by Jamal IG with you, Danny, and Shaquita, and Ralph, and Vase.
Great.
To the script. But it was just these little elements of improv that y'all added in that just made it that much more natural, and the scene was better for it. Like,
you know what makes me laugh in that scene? Because that's a great example of the improv. Was Raphael?
Yes.
I said to him, when I say that good grip, say I'm benching 300. Just kind of throw that in there.
Yeah.
And that wasn't part of the script, but he threw that in there. And the way he delivered it, it just makes me laugh every time I see it. You know, because it's such a guy thing to say when someone's like, "Hey, good grip."
It's natural and believable.
Yeah. So there was a lot of that going around. It was great. A lot of fun. Makes me laugh.
Absolutely.
Now this is a comedy, so timing is everything. How do you guys balance the timings between the different styles of the different people?
That's a great question. So as far as on my end, the rehearsals played a big part in that. Like I said, we rehearsed a lot, from the table reads to the rehearsals, before we started shooting to actually rehearsing, like, you know, just before each scene. And my style of directing is pretty easy going, so I like to just, you know, I like to see what the cast does, and then I jump in when I need to kind of like give direction when I need to. But each time we did the rehearsals, they just got better and better. So maybe we seen things that, hey, let's try this instead of that. And by the time we actually shot the real take, especially by take three or take four, everything just flowed. It just flowed really naturally. So, because by that time, that would have been the maybe seventh or eighth time that we went through that scene. So between that and just trying different things for each take, it worked out.
Cool.
And I'm a big fan of rehearsals. I love that the Switch That Love did that. Especially if you're a production that doesn't have maybe the budget to do 7, 8, 9 takes, and we can only do 3 takes, 4 takes. A rehearsal goes a long way. It's just absolutely beneficial. So, and that's where you find a lot of magic. You know what I'm saying? If you have a luxury of doing 10 takes, you're going to find magic.
Right.
But if you have only the luxury of 3 takes, rehearsal is key, man. A lot of times the actors would meet after, you know, and go, we have a scene tomorrow, and we'd read together and just kind of like work it out together and see what can come up. And, you know, a prepared cast is a good cast. And things come up like that, you know. Even in theater or in TV, you know, if you have the luxury to do rehearsal, magic happens. So, yeah.
How long of a rehearsal period did you guys have?
So we rehearsed, we started rehearsing about 3 weeks out from production. We did two full table reads, maybe three table reads. I can't remember. It was getting kind of far back. But we definitely did at least two full table reads. And then, like Danny mentioned, you know, the cast, we kind of broke up amongst ourselves. So one thing we did, and I give Shaquita credit for this, she did little sessions, basically. So we broke down scenes and before we started shooting. And based off the cast availability, we just had different cast members come out to her house, and we just rehearsed different scenes. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, we did the whole cast, if not more than once. Definitely everybody had a chance to do that once, so that helped tremendously. So all in all, I'd say we spent hours rehearsing each scene.
Wow.
Between the table read and between, like, all the way to the pre-scene rehearsals right before we shot them, we spent a good deal of time on each scene.
That's pretty unheard of. That's really great that you were able to work that in.
We made it a big priority this time around because one thing that we learned from Troop the Double Dare, which was a great film, but we didn't put that much time into rehearsing, and it kind of showed in the final product. And so we said, like, this time we just want to make it a bigger, way bigger priority. And moving forward, that's how we're going to operate from now on.
And I'm sure every future production, you're always going to have that. I know I will.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because I was talking to someone saying how much I admired a director because of the rehearsal that he made sure was in every movie. And this was a personal conversation, and they said, well, that person's obviously a theater director, not a film director. You can't do that. Now I'm hearing you guys saying it. It makes me feel so much better.
if you're working on a TV show, you know, let's pick any half hour sitcom, for example. They have a week to rehearse and fine tune. So by the time they're there on Friday, I mean, all they do is rehearsing all week.
That's right.
This line didn't work. This joke didn't hit. Let's rewrite it. Whatever. By the time Friday comes, they're on point. Boom. So I'm all for it. I mean, the bigger productions I've heard, the big productions, the $100 million budget, the $50 million budgets, they can do up to 10 takes.
Yeah.
More. What am I talking about, 10 takes? They can go up to 20 takes if they want it. Different angles, different this, you know, different coverages, whatever, and things happen that way too as well. So...
yeah. And then you hear the stories about, like, the directors, like your Stanley Kubricks and maybe your James Camerons, about they might have did 60 or 70 takes just to get the smallest little minute detail.
That's Kubrick. Kubrick was notorious for, you know, 50 takes, 60 takes, more, you know?
Hitchcock, if I'm not mistaken, yeah.
Oh, Hitchcock was unique, though. Hitchcock...
Yeah.
He had the whole movie shot in his head before he even cast it.
He was a mastermind.
Yeah,
his
thing was doing storyboards. He would storyboard a film prior to, so, and if you shot the storyboard, you would have the movie that he was about to film.
Yeah.
And you knew exactly what he wanted, the close-ups that he wanted, the scenes, he knew exactly. And then he would just film the storyboard. So he was great. But with that, he also was able to fine-tune and saw what was working and what wasn't working. So,
right.
Yeah.
It was funny because I remember Doris Day talking about Hitchcock and The Man Who Knew Too Much with Jimmy Stewart. They cut this entire thing of dialogue in the concert scene because Hitch wanted to hear the orchestra. He said,
oh, wow.
We already know what's going on behind the scenes. The audience is already seeing it. I just want to hear the orchestra. So, you know, have the reactions, and that's all. He just said, just have reactions to what you know is going on behind the scenes. I want to hear the music. I was like, whoa!
He was definitely ahead of his time, yeah.
Yeah, there's a reason why he's Hitch, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's right. I love the person to listen to about those people. It was the late Peter Bogdanovich, because he interviewed them before he became a director.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he even does their voices He was amazing too. I mean, my favorite Peter Bogdanovich movie is, I know you guys are going to think I'm silly, but What's Up, Doc?
Oh, okay.
What's Up, Doc is a very funny movie. It showed Ryan O'Neal for the first time that he could do comedy. No one knew that he could do it, and then sure enough, he did. Of course, Barbara, you know, she could do comedy because she won an Oscar for Funny Girl.
Funny Girl.
But, you know, Funny Girl, yeah, she won an Oscar for that, her first ever film. But
that was
Ryan O'Neal's first foyer into comedy, and he was fantastic in it.
And they even made fun of Love Story, too, so I just thought that was...
Love Story was the year prior, and he makes fun of it at one point when at the end Barbara says, you know, being in love never means never having to say sorry. And he goes, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And a year prior, that's exactly what he said, and it made the film like so famous for that line. So I'm kind of a movie buff. It was great that she did that. I'm kind of a movie buff, so I know things about movies. So
that's one of my top favorite. I mean, I love a lot of Bogdanovich. I mean, The Last Picture Show and all that. But I don't know. That is one of my go-to movies. If I'm down, if things aren't going right, I will put that on my DVD player and just laugh for a couple hours, you know, because it's just... It's nonstop comedy before there was that kind of comedy.
It's slapsticky without it being slapsticky. It's not quite there, but... It's good comedy. Jamal, if you get a chance to see it, watch it. And see Barbara at the top of her game, Ryan O'Neal, and,
introducing...
I think that was Madeline Kahn's first movie.
Introducing Madeline Kahn, that's what I was going to say. It's just, and she's so amazingly fantastic in it.
Yeah, she's a pure character actress. You know, not for nothing, I mean, just going back to Switch That Love, we had a lot of great character actors on our film. People who, you know, have years of experience as actors, and they just all brought a lot of different energy and a lot of, you know, very different, unique characters. So it was really nice to play off of them. A lot of fun. And our after parties were great. Remember our after party, all the dancing we did, how much fun we had?
That was great. Cool.
That was a good time. Yeah.
I love character actors. I think they're the most interesting.
Yes.
They're the ones that usually I feel work the most, you know, because they always have something different to contribute.
Yeah. And like I was saying, I think Madeline Kahn was a character actress. I mean,
she was a leading lady,
but she was also a character actress.
I love it. I'm going to have to check it out. Yeah, I will. I've never seen it, but you guys are definitely making me want to take a look.
Oh, gotta see that movie, Jamal. Gotta.
Okay,
so the movie. When is it available for everybody to see? How is it available? Is it streaming? Is it theater? Is it both? Give us the lowdown.
So it is available for streaming on Amazon Prime. And I think it came out a little bit after Valentine's Day, so it hasn't been out too long at all. From the reports we're hearing, it's doing very well. So thanks to everybody who's tuned in. Shout out to everybody all over the world. We hear a lot of people in Europe have been watching it. Go figure. So you know, we'll take it. But it is available for streaming on Amazon Prime. And that's probably where to be at exclusively for now. And then eventually we were thinking about a couple of other streaming sites, maybe Tubi. But definitely Amazon Prime for right now.
Is it possible it might be in a theater, or is that out of the question because of the environment and what's going on with COVID and everything?
Well, we still were discussing possibly doing a theater run. COVID definitely threw a wrench in that plan, but who knows? Maybe we'll do like a 2 or 3 week run in the theaters in the near future, and if that's the case, we'll definitely put the word out. But right now, we don't have any solid plans to have it in theaters.
Is there a website where they can go to where they can find the movie and find information about it after they see it on Amazon Prime?
Yes, so we have a website. It's www.loudfilmsinc.com. And we also have an Instagram page for the film, which is, you know, very good for the fans. It's more kind of seeing us on set, seeing us filming. I'm just getting a peek into the production process. So they can check that out. That is, Danny, what is our Instagram? I feel horrible.
Instagram is just Switched at Love. SWITCHED @AT Love, LOVE.
Okay.
Come by and check us out.
Yes, yes.
And also, we're coming to the end. So could I have whoever wants to go first, your social medias, your website, all that good stuff.
All right, so my Instagram, at least my film Instagram, is Directed by Jamal. Directed by Jamal, everything spelled normally. And Danny?
My Instagram is Mr. Danny Arroyo. I'll spell it. It's M-R, Danny, D-A-N-N-Y, Arroyo, A-R-R-O-Y-O. Give a follow or you know, reach out, and I will get back to you. And I hope you guys get a chance to watch Switch That Love. It was a labor of love.
It was.
A lot of people who, you know, who enjoy acting, who enjoy the process of filmmaking, our cinematographer, shout out. I mean, the least I can do, let me give some shout outs to some of our people here. I mean, Shakita Smith played Carla, Jackie O played Ariel, Mike Merrill played Cantrell, Candice Marie Singleton played Nicole, Khalid McAdams played Eric, Crystal Wilson was Miss D, Brittany Level was Lulu, Jason Louder was Mello, Serafina King was Hazel, Tiana Griggs was Diana. I'm going to not get this last name correct, but I'm going to try it. Nadia Jermasmenko was Marina, Raphael Gunn, Derek, EJ Dafibrio. Help me with that one. Do you know EJ
Dafibrio? I believe that's
Dafibrio was Raymond. Yes, yeah, Cedric Boswell was our bartender. Jeremy Rudd was our neighbor, and Nathan Rudd was our police officer. These are great, great people. And shout out to Stuart Clemens, who was our cinematographer.
Mm-hmm.
He was great. Edward. Yeah. I'm looking to get filmmakers. Edward J. Williams was our boom operator and sound mixer, and of course Marcus Collins, who's the writer and executive producer for Switch That Love. You know, appreciate everyone here. It takes a team to build the kingdom, you know?
That's beautiful. I like that. Very quickly, do you have any kind of events or film work, TV shows that are coming, anything that's coming up that you can give a little plug to that people can see, either one of you?
I have a TV show called Sangre Negra, aka Black Blood. That means Black Blood in Spanish. 8 episodes. That's supposed to be coming out in a few months. Fingers crossed. Episodes are completed. Just a matter of the homework. A film called Writer, which I shot in Utah. There about 6 weeks filming. That should be having a release, fingers crossed. Nobody's Angels, which I mentioned prior to, where I met Shakita, and look, we shot that one 2 years before we just switched that love, and that still hasn't found a home yet. But that project, a great action film, and not least, I have another film called Day Labor, which I spent a month and a half, or 6 weeks in Mexico. Filming. I played the lead role in that one, and that's an exciting film. So I got like 4 projects I'm waiting to come out. Fingers crossed that they come out sometime this year.
Great.
That's awesome, Danny. Awesome. I'll be looking forward to all of those, sir. And
I appreciate you. Thank you.
No doubt, man. No doubt. On my end, I have, I just put out a short film last month called A Love Potion. It's kind of like a dark comedy. You'll find that on my Instagram page, Directed by Jamal. And as far as feature-length films with Loud, my production company, we're not quite in pre-production yet, but we will be soon. That's the game plan for our next film called Dirty 30, which is kind of like a raunchy comedy, if you will, kind of like a Bridesmaids meets hangover type vibe where you have a young lady who's turning 30 years old and she's celebrating the birthday with her friends for like a crazy night out. So the working title was Dirty 30. We'll probably end up changing it, but that film, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
I had a great time. Thank you for even taking the time, and I hope you live your very happiest and healthiest and most thriving life.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry. Thank you.